Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, May 28th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Funhouse's own Adam Kovic. Adam,
hey,
how's it going?
Thanks for having me. Hey, it's great. 2 days in a row. You guys, I'm all up in you. This has been great.
Oh, yeah. Dude, you're all the way up in us, man. It's great to have you. Great to have Funhouse. Of course, we're doing the whole Funhouse Kind of Funny crossover week. How have you been enjoying it? How have you been enjoying being on Kind of Funny content?
We were talking about it. It's funny. Preamble. We were doing a meeting yesterday. We're like, God, we actually really like collaborating. Kind of funny.
Awesome.
Funny. There, you guys have always been some of my favorite people to work with. And this goes all the way back pre Kind of Funny. I was talking to Greg about this yesterday when we did the Gauntlet season 2. And so when I first met Greg and Tim, and I thought they were like a married couple because of the way they acted.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, and like we just sit around and play games and stuff, and I was like, I love doing stuff with these guys. So yeah, some of my favorite people in the world. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Of course, like as somebody who recently got hired to Kind of Funny, I've been a fan of Funhouse. Right, I've seen your videos. You guys have always been killing it. Listen to quite a bit of Dude Soup. Really, really like that show.
Thank you.
And so it's great to have you guys over here. To recap, what are all the shows you've been on so far? Because I'm very curious because I've not had the chance to like. Keep up. I know you've been on KFGD with Greg.
Yeah, help me out, Kevin. Because I know I did this show yesterday.
Kind of Funny podcast.
That's right.
Yesterday, for a total of 10 minutes, I think.
Oh, that's right. Okay,
yeah. Sorry about that. That was my fault. Technical difficulties.
No, it's all good. It's just becoming a blur, and then. We've got the Cool Friends show for
Friends. That's today,
yeah.
Right?
That is today, yes. But it's all becoming kind of a fun blur. I don't know. And then we've had, you guys on a bunch of our stuff. I just watched a video yesterday that we shot last week. Andy kicked it off this week, this Monday, where we did our new series where we're playing like CSGO co-op games. We don't know if it's just CSGO right now, but we were trying to spook Andy, and I think it worked, maybe. We'll see.
Amazing. Well, awesome. People for sure should for sure check those out. Of course, youtube.com/funhouse, youtube.com/kindoffunny, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. That's where you can find all the content. But enough about that. Let's talk about Xbox Series X backwards compatibility, Iron Man VR going gold, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, of course, it's Kinda Fun House Week, like we just talked about. We're doing all sorts of crossover content with our pals at Funhouse, like this episode of KFGD featuring Adam Kovic. To catch the full rundown, head over to kindoffunny.com/funhouse. Also, we have a huge Predator Hunting Ground stream tomorrow happening at 2 p.m. until 5 p.m. on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We did our first one this week yesterday, and that was only an hour long, but we had a blast. And of course, Funhouse is actually in that game as voices, which is a crazy thing.
I mean, we're the guys who the Predator is killing. So, and lady. I believe there are a couple ladies. But yeah, a friend of ours is producer on that, and he had us try out and liked what we did. So we got to be the voices that are going around getting all muddy and, here's blowing our vocal cords out. So that was a lot of fun.
No, it's super awesome. Like, one of my favorite things while playing that game is, of course, at the beginning of each round, you want to mud up so the Predator can't find you. And like, one of my favorite voice lines is Elise being like, man, I hope this is mud, because it's gross out there. And so, of course, people should tune in to our Predator Hunting Ground stream that's going on for 3 hours tomorrow. Again, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, 2 p.m. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed, Blackjack, and Al Tribesman. Today, we're brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. But I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have Force Quartz today. A Baker's Dozen! Starting with a huge number one, Xbox Series X aims to be the most compatible console. This comes from a blog post by Jason Ronald, the director of program management for Xbox Series X. And before I even get into it, just to like kind of preface what this article is, because it's a large blog post. I had to cut it down, and even through cutting it down, it still ended up being a lot of information. And so we'll read through it in a second.
Me in if you want to cut in and just you know talk and you know just shoot the breeze. I'm happy to. I'm excited about new consoles, so I will happily talk about this all day every day.
This is gonna be an exciting show. You're welcome to cut in whenever you want, because yeah, there's a lot to break down here, but basically this is Xbox sort of breaking down what backwards compatibility looks like for them. And so Jason Ronald writes in this blog post, "Our goal has always been to empower gamers to play the best versions of games from across four generations of Xbox at the launch of Xbox Series X. These principles were key to us from day one and influenced many of our design decisions as we started on our journey to create our most powerful and compatible console ever. The very same team who created new innovative ways to preserve and enhance your existing catalog of games on Xbox One is the same team pushing the envelope again with Xbox Series X. Maintaining compatibility presents a massive technical challenge as a fundamental system and chip architectures advance across generations. Developers highly optimize their games to the unique capabilities and performance of a console to provide the best experience for their players. To make the Xbox Series X our most compatible console ever required both significant innovation in the design of the custom processor as well as the unique design of the Xbox operating system and hypervisor at the heart of our next generation platform. With more than 100,000 hours of playtesting already completed, thousands of games are already playable on Xbox Series X today, from the biggest blockbusters to cult classics and fan favorites. Many of us in Team Xbox play on the Xbox Series X daily as our primary console, and switching between generations is seamless. By the time we launch this holiday, the team will have spent over 200,000 hours ensuring your game library is ready for you to jump in immediately. Not only should gamers be able to play all of these games from the past, but they should play better than ever before. Backwards compatible games run natively on the Xbox Series X hardware, running with the full power of the CPU, GPU, and the SSD. No boost mode, no down clocking. The full power of the Xbox Series X for each and every backward compatible game. This means that all titles run at the peak performance that they were originally designed for, many times even higher performance than the games saw on their original launch platform, resulting in higher and more steady frame rates and rendering at their maximum resolution and visual quality. Backwards compatible titles also see significant reductions in in-game load times from the massive leap in performance from our custom NVMe SSD, which powers the Xbox Velocity architecture. As I play through my personal backlog, and again, this is Jason Ronald talking. As I play through my personal backlog as part of our internal testing, all of the incredible games from Xbox One and earlier play best on Xbox Series X. Also, in partnership with the Xbox Advanced Technology Group, Xbox Series X delivers a new, innovative HDR reconstruction technique, which enables the platform to automatically add HDR support to games. As this technique is handled by the platform itself, it allows us to enable HDR with zero impact to the game's performance, and we can also apply it to Xbox 360 and original Xbox titles developed almost 20 years ago, well before existence of HDR. In addition to the new quick resume feature was designed to not only work with new games, but it can also be enabled for backward compatible titles. All of these advances happen at the platform level and require no additional work from title developers. We're also creating whole new classes of innovations, including the ability to double the frame rate of a select set of titles from 30 FPS to 60 FPS or 60 FPS to 120 FPS. The team also continues to listen to feedback from the community on additional titles you would like to see added to the backward compatibility program. Resurrecting titles from history often presents a complex mix of technical and licensing challenges, but the team is committed to doing everything we can to continue to preserve our collective gaming legacy. Adam, there's a whole lot in there.
Yeah, I'm so as someone who has made a career out of playing old broken games on newer hardware, we do the series demo disc where we take, you know, old games and we try to play it on like, you know, a Windows 10 PC or, you know, used to be Windows 8. And seeing how a lot of games, so many of the physics and other things are tied to the frame rate, I'm really curious to see what that does and how they fix that or don't. I'm curious to see if the HDR how that works with games that didn't have HDR, barely, you know, just barely existed, and things like the Source Engine and stuff back in the day, which is, I want to see it to believe it, but I can't wait for people to experience things that we have where, like, you play the original Hitman and bodies just fly everywhere because your frame rate's way too fast for the game to comprehend.
Like, as somebody who likes fighting games, like, I know Street Fighter, and pretty much every fighting game is designed around frame rate and, like, how many frames a certain move takes to do, right? I know that changing frame rates up out of nowhere to those games could often break them. And so I'm curious to see, like, how this works on a game-to-game basis. Like, is this going to be a thing that affects mainly, let's say, third-person action games or first-person games? Because, like, first-person games and I guess third-person action games also could always kind of benefit from a faster frame rate. I'm curious to see. A lot of these details are awesome to me. Like, we've had had an ongoing conversation about backwards compatibility and smart delivery from the sense, and I've always kind of came at it from the sense of, like, cool, smart delivery sounds dope, and it is, like, a dope thing, right? The idea that you can buy a game once and then have it for whatever system that you need it on, like, that's a really cool thing. But the details around backwards compatibility have always been interesting to me, because, like, the fact that your backwards compatible games are also going to be able to take advantage of the power of the Xbox Series X, to me, that makes backwards compatibility an almost, like, even more interesting thing. Like, I can play old games, and yeah, like, there's not necessarily work being done to, I don't know, let's just say Banjo-Kazooie, because that's the first one that came to my head, right? Like, there's not actual work nuts being done to Banjo-Kazooie. Let's say Nuts and Bolts, even, because that's a 360 game.
Yeah.
But the fact that I can go to it and have quick resume and have maybe a faster FPS and have HDR, like, to me, that's a really cool thing. And I like the way that they're spelling it out. And I like how clear they're being about it, too, because they're saying that, like, all these features are going to be available four games from launch, right? Like, they've tested out thousands of games and from launch, like, this is going to be a thing that's there and that's going to be available for you to use. Like, all that sounds like great news to me.
It sounds great. It's always comes down to how was it executed in practice. I'm only saying I'm hesitant. I love all the stuff the Xbox team has been doing, and they're always been they are definitely putting their hearts and souls into it, but there are still issues with the Master Chief Collection, and it's, you know, now making its way to Steam and coming out on PC, and that's a lot of stuff that I don't think they can actually fix unless they just actually remake the entire thing. There are certain things that are actually tied to frame rate. So, like, if you play at a higher frame rate online, you're actually at a disadvantage a lot of the times. If you play at 30 or 60 frames, basically what the game was intended to be played on, you have a better chance of hitting your shots, as I've been told, and I've actually tried it a few times, and it does seem to actually make a difference. If you play with an unlimited frame rate, it actually kind of ruins the game sometimes online. So yeah, so I think a lot of these things, hopefully they don't impact a lot of these single player games from, you know, our collective childhoods, and I think it's really cool that they're going back all four generations. That's like, I love hearing this stuff. I think it's really cool. As always, I want to see what the execution is, and, you know, experience it for myself when I play Banjo-Kazooie in HDR, 4K, RTX, all the things.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think strikes me as pretty cool from the Xbox side of things, because they announced backwards compatibility as a feature for Xbox One in, like, 2015, and since then it seems like they've really taken ownership of what that means for their ecosystem. They've gone harder and harder in terms of, like, making backwards compatibility, like, a core feature of the Xbox ecosystem, in a way that, for them building the Xbox Series X, it seems like from the ground up they've been like, all right, how do, like, we're making this console, we're making this box to be the most powerful box it can be. We're also going to make this box at the core, like, at the hardware level, with the ability to, like, take advantage of backwards compatibility. That makes me think and hope that the future of Xbox in terms of where they go with their hardware will always involve backwards compatibility with some sense, right? Like, like, the things they've done so far with Xbox One and backwards compatibility have been, like, you know, to what you're saying, right? Like, can be kind of hit or miss with the Master Chief Collection especially. But I think overall, like, especially compared to Nintendo and Sony, like, they've done a pretty great job of maintaining their library and having games come out for backwards compatibility over time. And I know I don't think we've gotten announcements of backwards compatible games for a long while, because I think they've kind of hit the threshold of what they're able to do with Xbox One. But I'm curious to see, like, with Xbox Series X, I wonder if then that allows for new titles to be backwards compatible. Like, I wonder if we then see, like, Jet Set Radio Future or something like that come
Shenmue to the platform. 2. Yeah. Panzer Dragoon. You bring up a good point, too, with when they first came out with the Xbox One. I think that was a huge humbling experience for them. Phil Spencer sort of inherited this mess, which when they first, the console, yes, was capable of being backwards compatible and all that stuff, but they were so focused on TV and the future and getting rid of disc and all these things that scared people. And now with Phil Spencer being, I mean, it's not just him, it's him and his team. Them being a lot more humble and saying, we're going to do the things that are important to us. And we know it's important to, it might just be a few people, but it's important to them, which is preserving, a video game library. And now we're getting a console that is going in with that mindset instead of having to evolve from the thing that we started with, I have never seen another console with a in and out HDMI port and something that's basically never been used. I tried it once. I didn't like it. So too much lag. But I'm really excited for how much care they put into the backwards compatibility team. And it's something they don't have to do. No one's twisting their arm. It is something that in a weird way, I know it's a corporation, but it seems like they're doing out of the goodness of their heart. And something they're very passionate about, and I think people will appreciate. I mean, I'm one of them who definitely appreciates just being able to boot up an old game and know that it works.
So the nanobiologist writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you guys can, and says, "Hi, Blessing Adam. We got some information regarding the Series X, and oh my god, it sounds too good to be true. Every game available on the One is available on the Series X, improved with better frame rate, HDR support, and quick start, basically remastering them without the work from the developer and only through hardware. So, do you think a feature like this, where all games run better on the Series X at launch and not just Series X games, will make the console a day one buy for many, many more people? Keep in mind that all Series X games will be available on the One for at least a year after launch of the new console. How about for yourselves, particularly you, Adam? Does this new feature, where all games run in a way better state, entice you to pick up a Series X day one or during the first couple months of launch? And then how can the PS5, who previously said that they will have thousands of PS4 games be backwards compatible enabled throughout the life cycle of the PS5, counter this when they run their backwards compatibility through a service? Thanks, the Nanobiologist." So there's a lot of questions packed in here, but to bring it back to the first question that Nanobiologist asked, right? Will this make the console a day one buy for many, many more people?
I think this is an exciting piece of hardware, not only from the internals, but also from a design aesthetic. They're doing something different, which is kind of strange to see Microsoft doing, to kind of take a big swing like this. Granted, it is another black box. It's a square, it's like most technology that we have. All my consoles kind of more or less look the same, unless you have a Gears of War themed one or a God of War themed one, a GAU, whichever GAU you want. It is definitely a day one buy for me, but also I'm in this industry where, I'm a huge enthusiast of this sort of stuff. I bought a PS4, Switch, and Xbox One, launch edition. This is stuff, even if I wasn't in this industry, I'd probably still be excited about this stuff. I love new tech. I love trying out new things. I don't like pigeonholing myself into one place. This is coming from someone who is mostly PC these days, but it's what I'm really excited about is that it's all sort of converging into, it's just almost convenience factor. Like, the Series X seems to be something that's like, it's very much living room focus. And then their attitude seems to be, if you want to play a PC game, go play it on your PC if you have that option. But if you want to chill out, play in your living room, Series X is good for that. And you can just continue on and ideally have a similar experience, but obviously not from a controls perspective. So doing those sorts of things is really exciting.
What's that? Did you activate Siri as you were talking? Is that what happened?
It was, as talking as someone who's a tech enthusiast, it was either a Google Home, a Siri watch, or a Samsung assistant somewhere.
That's amazing.
I am the worst. I apologize.
No, it's totally fine. I mean, we're saying Siri like a billion times as we're talking about Series X, and so it's bound to happen.
Oh, fact, that's, sure right. That's what's doing it, right?
Yeah.
I'm Series X.
I'm sure people who are listening to this podcast on speaker are having the similar issue of like, Siri, fucking shut up. Just stop, please. You're ruining this for me.
What about you? Like, is this day one buy for you?
I mean, I'm in the same boat as you of like, we're both involved in video games. We both love video games. We're both like, you know, we both want the new and great thing that's coming out. And so, yeah, like the Xbox Series X is likely going to be a day one or like a launch period purchase for me. That said, like to the details that they talked about here, and especially the statement that Jason had at the beginning of his blog post here, right, where he's talking about like the Xbox Series X has become the box for people that are working at Microsoft and that are playtesting it, because it's able to run all the games from all the other boxes and have all those features available for you. Like, to me, that's very enticing from the sense of, okay, once I get the Xbox Series X, I can just pack up my Xbox One right away. I don't have to keep all these boxes together. And like, granted, that's the thing for a PS5 also. Like, once I get a PS5, I'm not necessarily going to need my PS4 out, because the PS5 is going to be backwards compatible with the PS4. But, you know, the way that they've kind of pitched the Xbox Series X as this all-encompassing system, to where, yeah, now you have the Xbox One games you want, you have your 360 games, and you have your original Xbox games. Like, you know, that's really cool. The fact that they're going to be taking advantage of all these new features, that's really cool for me. That makes it something that's exciting and something that I want to get off the top, once it releases. That said, I'm curious to see how that translates to the wider market, because when we're looking at this fall and we're looking at these console releases, I feel like, and this is the thing we've been talking about on the show forever, but like, this console transition, more so than ever before, for me at least, the way I've been seeing it, has seemed pretty seamless. Like, there seems to be less reason to kind of want to jump ship from Xbox One to Xbox Series X. If you look at the game side of things, like the features, cool. Like, you know, the fact that you can double your frame rate on your games, awesome. The fact that you can get HDR in your old games, awesome. The fact that it's going to be super powerful, like, that's great. That said, if I wanted to play Halo Infinite, like, I can still play Halo Infinite on my Xbox One. I'm sure Hellblade 2 Senua's Saga is going to be out on Xbox One also. Like, the games that I want, at least within the first year, are going to be on Xbox One. Granted, I'm sure there's going to be some third-party games that are next-gen exclusive that might be enticing, but I think that's going to be one of those things where the wider market kind of weighs it and goes like, all right, cool. Like, these, all this stuff sounds awesome, but I can wait to get this. Like, I can wait a year or so before I get this. And I don't think that's necessarily going to be a problem, because I don't think Microsoft is obviously trying to sell the Xbox Series X to as many people as possible. But I think for them, like, as long as they get people in the ecosystem, that's all that matters. And so, like, if you're playing on your Xbox One, as long as you're playing Halo Infinite, or you're playing like an Xbox game, or you're playing a Game Pass game, or you're playing a game in general on your Xbox One, you know, it's a win for Microsoft. They don't mind. Exactly. Yeah, I think what they're doing here is good. I think they have a good strategy, and I think like as far as like the converting people from this gen to next gen, I think overall it's going to be a slower burn for people in the grand scheme of things. But I also think that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, also hardware-wise, it's looking more and more like what PCs are, where it's these sort of gradual upgrades, and that sort of happened with this last generation, where they came off of it. You know, we had PlayStation 3's Cell processor, and then Xbox 360 had a weird Xeon processor that's kind of more akin to like a Mac, architecture. And when we moved to these new consoles, which are now the old consoles, they started to look a lot more like PCs internally, using things like DDR4 RAM and, they're more of these kind of like scale down PCs. And so I think a lot of people saw it kind of going this way, where it's like, well, the next generation is just going to be more of that. So it's not going to be that huge jump from PS3 to PS4, where the internals are that radically different. They're doing some really cool stuff with solid state technology, but this is also stuff that has existed for a long time. It's stuff that exists in your phone today. It's most PCs have this. It also, you know, the obvious, there's different variations that you can use with that, but it is some really exciting tech that I think most people probably aren't really aware of. And they're going to have it's going to be really exciting for people when they can, you know, boot up a game, you know, seeing what the stuff like Sony's been doing, where they're showing Spider-Man load in like, you know, 2 seconds.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's fun stuff. I think people are really going to enjoy that. But I think for the everyday tech enthusiasts like ourselves, we're going to go, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Okay. I've seen this stuff before, and I'm glad now it is it's making our way into our everyday, you know, sort of console architecture.
Yeah. No. For sure. And then to this last part of the nanobiologist question, right? Like, how can the PS5, who previously said that they will have thousands of PS4 games, be backwards compatible enabled throughout the lifecycle of the PS5? How can they counter this when they run their backwards compatibility through a service? So the way I've always read PS5 backwards compatibility is like, from the Sony side of things, I think they just jumbled up the messaging in a way that made it confusing. But I think they'll be just fine as far as like what the PS4 backwards compatibility will be. Like, you know, from all the things that Xbox has said, you know, as far as like quick resume and HDR and all that stuff, like Mark Cerny in that talk that he did that was supposed to be at GDC but ended up not being at GDC, and so he was doing it in front of like a bunch of like black silhouettes, like the things he talked about in that talk also seem pretty appealing, right? Like the fact that like you can get PS4 games boosted through the power of PS5, the fact that you can be able to take advantage of what the SSD has to offer for those games, quicker load times, all these different things. Like, you know, I think that's still going to be great. I think we're still going to see like I think most games will be backwards compatible at launch for PS4. I think it's just their messaging on it was kind of messy in a way that makes us think that like, all right, are all PS4 games going to be backwards compatible on PS5? Like, I think things will be fine. I think it just comes down to whenever this upcoming PS5 event happens, I think they just got that. I think they will communicate it in a way where we're like, oh, okay, cool. We're freaking out over nothing. Okay, cool. Like, you know, they have their own solution too. Granted, they're not going to have PS3, PS2, and PS1 games, which is always going to be a bummer to me. But I also don't think that's the end of the world. Like, Greg kind of brings up this point, and I kind of agree with him, even though, like, personally, like, I have feelings about it. Like, Greg always brings up the fact, like, does it matter? In the grand scope of things, how much does backwards compatibility matter? Like, in terms of, like, the pure business. And, like, I think Greg is right in the sense that, like, if PS3, PS2, and PS1 games aren't playable on PS5, I don't think it'll affect a sale. I don't think that'll really affect things that much in terms of what their bottom line is. That said, it's a feature that I would love to have as a PlayStation
person.
Sale,
but I guess you're still going to buy it, right?
Like, I'm still going to, and that's the thing. I'm still going to buy it either way. Like, I'm buying new hardware for new games. If I really badly wanted to play old games, I would get a PS3, which I do have a PS3 in my room as I say that. But like, yeah, like I don't know. To you, how much does backwards compatibility matter to you as a feature?
It's the thing that I don't miss until I want it. You know, it's not the reason I go into looking at new tech, but there are definitely times where I go, oh, I need to go back and do this thing. And then, it, you know, obviously you can't, or you have to use a service like PS Now, which is subpar, in my opinion, of, you know, playing games on a server somewhere that's been, you know, going through a Gaikai server on live, whatever that is. I'm just not a fan of the cloud style of doing it. I understand that's a band-aid, you know, it's a $700 million band-aid that they're trying to put onto things. But what I like more for me is when they say, no, those games play one-to-one. In fact, they play better because we're actually the hardware supporting it, as opposed to no, you play in a cloud, because it sounds like you're being talked down to, essentially saying you can't even notice. It's like, I can notice microseconds of lag, and if it's there, it's going to affect my enjoyment of something. But yeah, for going in with something new, it's not something I'm looking at and saying you need to support these old things, but it is always like a pleasantry. It is a plus. It's like, oh, cool. It's an add-on that I don't necessarily need, but it is one that I appreciate.
Yeah, like if I could play Burnout 3 Takedown on my PS5, that would mean the world to me. That would be awesome to me. That'd be a great move, and I think all of us would be like glad for it, right? I think most people who are buying a PS5 would like there to be a feature where you could play old games on it. But I also think it's one of those things where Sony like weigh the amount of work that you would have to put into it to make it a worthwhile thing, and they weigh like the other things that they have going on, and like, you know, what they weigh the fact that their first party games are like uplifting their platform so much. They look at like the bottom line and the money and all this stuff, and they're like, all right, like, you know, we'll make PS4 games play on PS5 because that makes sense, but you know, how much work do we really want to put into it? Especially when you look at Microsoft and Xbox to see how much work it's taking from them to make it work. And the fact that they're doing it, you know, is awesome. But like, what is the return at the end of the day to make it like a good business move?
I totally agree with Greg on that, as much as I hate it. Sony is not doing this in a vacuum. They understand the business side of it, and they know who's buying their console and why. And if their sales chart doesn't line up, and like, it could be wrong, and people could just be voting, you know, with their wallets. And if they make that, that's a huge misstep. That's something they'll probably go back to and go, we messed up. But my guess is they have the market research, and they understand, they know what they're doing, and they know that whatever they do, the marketability and the brand recognition of PlayStation is so important, so much more important than, you know, backwards compatibility. And but, you know, Microsoft's sort of playing the long game, and I think they're hoping for the grassroots sort of word of mouth angle, and just trying to be the best that they can be to the customers that they have, and holding on to those people, and then hoping that they spread the word. It's strange, because in this situation, Microsoft is the trillionaire giant that basically has unlimited funds, and Sony is the one that needs to be a bit more nimble. They're still a big company, but they're not as big as Microsoft. You know, it's something one of those things that I think we often forget, but Microsoft's acting like your cool friend, just like, you know, man, we're just like a small little startup. Like, you're not, you're so rich.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I guess they can afford to have that attitude.
Speaking of PlayStation, story number two, Iron Man VR has gone gold. This comes from @Camouflage, the developer on Twitter, who they tweet, after years of hard work, we are proud to announce that Marvel's Iron Man VR has officially gone gold. We can't wait for everyone to hashtag suit up when the game releases exclusively for PlayStation VR on July 3rd.
Well, dang it. I don't have a PlayStation VR.
Oh, snap. Oh, no. Were you looking forward to Iron Man VR? Did you have any interest in the game?
Yeah, I'm always interested in fun VR stuff. And the Marvel, there was that one canceled. This is I don't know if anyone's going to remember this. There was a canceled THQ Avengers game that was in all first person. I think it was a Kinect game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it might have been a Wii game, I think.
Or maybe, it was definitely motion control in some shape or form. And I always thought that would be kind of cool. And then if you're familiar with The Void, if you've done that, the VR like arcade kind of thing, it's like an escape room type VR thing. There is an Iron Man experience I never got to try. And so I'm wondering if this is something similar to that. But for sure. Dude, who doesn't want to be Iron Man? That sounds awesome.
Now, can I sell you on PSVR since you said you don't have VR? First of all, do you have a PlayStation?
Yeah, I have a PS4. It's okay, right good. Over here. Yeah,
I was scared. I thought I had to like kick you off the show in a second. And have
I also
Kevin
play Final Fantasy VII Remake. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Good man. PSVR is great. PSVR, I would say, and this is me speaking ignorantly because I've only used PSVR and Oculus Quest, which is a bad comparison. But as far as I see and as far as I understand, PlayStation VR has the best library. If you're to ask me as somebody who has played PSVR over the last few years, you look at, I was gonna say Tetris Effect, but Tetris Effect just released on other platforms, but you look at that, you look at Astrobot Rescue Mission, one of my favorite games of the generation, beautiful platformer, 10 out of 10 experience. You look at Trover Saves the Universe, which might be on other platforms as well, but still on PSVR, great game. Blood and Truth. Are you familiar with Blood and Truth?
I know none of these. My world has been shaped by the Quest and the Index. And I'm just for me right now, VR still isn't at a point where it doesn't make me sick. So that's sort of, I got really sick playing PSVR when we did Resident Evil.
Resident Evil 7.
Seven, yes. We played that one. Both my wife and I played it at a friend's house, and we did it with the controller. And then we had headaches, and we were like sick to our stomachs for about a day. So it's not quite there for me yet. It's getting there. It's getting really close. I think the Quest has gotten the closest to me not feeling like motion sickness.
Yeah.
But the controllers are not the greatest. So like it might just be my body type is not capable of enjoying VR. I want to, believe me. VR experiences are some of the coolest things in the world. I'm mentioning The Void earlier. They have this this thing you could try out. The one I have done two times is where you're a stormtrooper, but you're actually moving through hallways and you're holding a gun. And when you get shot, your chest vibrates. Like it actually feels like you're in, you know, a video game. You're not just the tether is a big problem for me too. Tether and control. Like, I think once you get rid of the tether and I can just use my hands, then I'm sold. I'm good.
Yeah.
Put me in a big empty warehouse.
I say PlayStation has the best library, but I would say Oculus Quest has been the best VR experience for me. Like, the fact that there's no cables involved, and the fact that you feel free, the fact that you can limit your space so that you're not like fearful of like running into walls, because the system will tell you when you're getting too close to the barrier. Like, all that stuff to me like makes that experience a perfect experience. But that said, PSVR is still awesome. PSVR is great.
Like the consoles, it comes down to who's got the best library, who's got the best games. I still think VR is so new that really good games should not be behind technology. But that was Sony's play, and the fact that I was never expecting PlayStation to get into the VR game, but the fact that they did, and people seem pretty, you know, positive about it, and it's affordable, I think is great. I think I just like the idea that the technology is being pushed forward in innovative ways, and people didn't drop it like they did in the past, where, you know, VR is not, it's not really new. It happened 20 years ago or whatever, but it was just a giant TV on your head. But now it's like the Oculus was bought by Facebook, and my fear was they were just going to go, oh, this is a fad. It's not going anywhere. I'm happy to see that they're still iterating and there's stuff coming out, and that there could potentially still be a business, or there is a market for this technology, because it is the future. It is where we're going. Even if it's VR or AR or some combination of the two, or something new that we haven't discovered, immersion is definitely the future of all entertainment.
I'm curious to see how much of the future it is, though, because like the more and more I play VR and try it out, the games that I've loved for VR have always been novel experiences, and experiences where I'm like, man, I couldn't get this anywhere else. Like, when I think of Astrobot, I'm like, this is an experience I couldn't get anywhere else. Same with Beat Saber. Same with like quite a few other VR games. Like Blood and Truth felt like a one-of-a-kind experience for PSVR, you know, because like these are games that all take advantage of the system in very unique ways, in ways that, like, you know, felt cool and felt new and felt fresh. I'm curious to see how much VR can keep that up, because with Half-Life Alyx also being a game that recently came out for VR, with that game seemingly pushing VR to, I don't want to say its limits, but to limits that VR hasn't seen before. Whenever I hear people kind of talk about Half-Life Alyx, and whenever I see gameplay, I'm like, oh man, this seems next level. I'm curious to see whether VR ends up as a thing to where, like, now we look at it as side by side with traditional gaming, or if it's still like, if it ends up in the far future as like just a niche still, because right now it's definitely a niche, but it's a niche with potential. I think VR can go places because of how cool it is, but I'm curious if it actually ends up like bigger than it is currently.
I think one of the follies is looking at it in its current state. What we're looking at is a alpha or a beta of what it could be. And so it's like, this is, it's for the next generation, for people to think bigger. What if? And I mean, my dream situation is you go into a padded facility, like a Sky Zone or something like that, and you just put on some glasses, and all of a sudden you're transported into a jungle or old medieval times, and you have foam swords, and, you know, it's like, it's LARPing on a next level. And it's like, how do you do that? How do we get there where it becomes an actual immersion? It becomes this thing. And like, obviously this is all, it's science fiction, but it feels like it's getting closer in those iterations, and someone's going to figure it out. They're gonna figure out what that technology is. And I don't know what it is, but I'm staying hopeful for it. And that, realizing that we're just getting sort of the early glimpses of what it is. Cause no one wants to carry a computer on their back right now. And being tethered and all this stuff, like, people are going to look back at this and go, oh my God, that's so positively medieval what you did just to get a glimpse of what the future could be. So this stuff always excites me. No.
Story number three, Apex Legends season 5 is, let me say it again. Apex Legends season 5 off to the best start of any season to date. This comes from a press release released by EA, and they write, Respawn today announced that Apex Legends season 5, Fortune's Favor, has quickly become the best start of any season to date. More new players are coming into the game, and along with returning fans, it has driven the highest player retention for a season launch, with players playing for longer periods of time per day than ever before. As new seasons of the game's story unfolds in Season 5, the community's connection to the lore and legends is growing stronger as well. Apex Legends Season 5 trailers earned more than 47 million views to date, the most ever for Apex Legends season launch trailers. Apex Legends sets itself apart from other Battle Royale games through its lore and its legends. Respawn continues to inject storylines and content into each season, from online and in-game teases to the quote, stories of the Outlands trailers and all new quests in Season 5. The development team based in Los Angeles and Vancouver seeks to deliver something truly unique and pushes themselves to try something new as they evolve the game's narrative. Adam, do you play Apex at all?
When it first came out, I've been a little lukewarm on it, but I have been sort of meaning to get into it. Battle Royale stressed me out. that game type. Messed a little around with Modern Warfare's Warzone mode, but just for some reason, I was always raised to be around a Respawn. Respawns have been part of my life for so long that the whole like you have one life is always very stressful. I like Apex's system. That you know other people eventually ripped off, which is great. Yeah. Being able to revive people, I think that makes it a lot more sustainable. But it is a game that I think is really well done. But it's are you a fan? Is this one of your games?
I'm a huge fan. I've been playing Season 5 like crazy, which is actually the reason I included this new story. Because okay. Like for me, as somebody who's been, like, because like to what you're saying, actually, like I'm 100% with you as far as battle royales. Go like when PUBG first came out, I remember feeling super stressed while playing that game. One, because like that game originally didn't run that well; it ran like shit when it first came out. But then also like that feeling of being alone and only having one life, and like you know playing 20 minutes of a match and then dying after getting no kill felt super discouraging to me, and I didn't really like that. I eventually ended up like getting a bit into Fortnite and playing that hardcore for like 2 months when it came to Switch. For me, Apex Legends came out and became my perfect battle royale game for like kind of the reasons that you mentioned, right? Like the resurrect system, I think is super cool. There are just so many different features in Apex Legends that I think makes it so accessible, and that makes it feel like you're not just wasting time. Even if you go like a full match without getting a kill, like you feel like, okay, well, you always feel like you have a chance. Where I feel like in other battle royale games, you don't always feel like you get that chance. Like if you get sniped or something, Apex Legends feels
you
like
held it, me it, down, and you made me play a battle royale right now. It would have to be Apex because I'm with you. It feels like the most accessible, and it's more of my play style, like more of the faster first person shooter and movement based and stuff. And the fact that it has like heroes and abilities and stuff like that clicks for me. It has like enough Overwatch and enough Call of Duty, enough little things in there that I'm like, okay, I can play this. I'm with you. Fortnite, I could not get into. I was just like, I can't build. I'm not good at that. So
yeah, like I was playing actually with my friend Ben yesterday, who's like not really a battle royale person. In fact, like the only shooters that Ben really plays are Call of Duty and Overwatch. And the way I kept like describing it to him as we were playing yesterday, I was like, hey, like, you know, Apex Legends is just Call of Duty and Overwatch had a baby with Fortnite, I guess. So like they had a triple baby.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and like it's just that, right? Like it has the hero system from Overwatch. It has like Call of Duty's sense of like first person shooting, right? Like it has a similar kind of control and feel to that. But like overall, like it's still like the successful battle royale game that works. And yeah, to the Season 5 thing, right? Like they're seeing the most success with Season 5. And for me, as somebody who's been playing Season 5 nonstop. I don't know what the secret sauce was. I think for me, it was the new character. The new character is fantastic. You know, new character Loba is like my new main. Her ability to like teleport, you know, is super useful. As somebody who also mains Reaper in Overwatch, like that translated super well for me. But then like, you know, that stuff is cool. The map rotation is awesome. The challenges have been great. And then like they've added new story elements, which also have been interesting. Like they've been finding a groove with Apex Legends that for me, like, speaks to like this game being a long-term thing. Like I don't think Apex Legends is going away anytime soon.
I'm glad now that the dust is sort of settled that people have found their game, and I've been rooting for Respawn since that studio was formed. I'm like, come on, please. And I was worried that with two Titanfalls that were not quite the biggest hits that I think people were expecting to be, you know, the next Call of Duty, that their existence was somewhat in jeopardy, and then EA did the whole buyout, and then we got an amazing Star Wars game, and now we have a battle royale that seems to have found its place in the world. I'm really excited for them. The fact that they just opened up that Vancouver studio is great too. It's like, cool, yeah, they're expanding. Those guys have been, ever since they were just that small team, they've been killing it, and they've always, at the core of it, made fun games, and I want to see them succeed, and hopefully EA doesn't grind them into a small paste.
Like, the, yeah, no, for 100%, like, that's, like, actually the big real fear that, like, you could have with it is that, yeah, them being owned by EA is always going to be kind of like, okay, let's see how this goes. But Respawn has had an amazing track record, you know, ever since Titanfall 2, and I guess you could say Titanfall 1 if you're a person that loved Titanfall 1. But, like, ever since they were founded, let me just say that, they've had a really great track record of games. And so, yeah, like, the fact that the Vancouver studio opened up that is focused on Apex Legends, it makes me think, like, about what the future of this game is going to be, because it's only going to go up from here, especially with them founding a new studio that is focused on the game, that will be able to make, like, focus and make content for that game. I'm very curious to see what the future of it holds.
If it leads to more Titanfalls, I'll be very happy.
I don't know
if it's going to happen, but fingers crossed.
And then our last story, story number 4, your PS Plus games have been revealed for what's next month, June. This is from the PS blog, where they write, PS Plus members face a tough question this month. Do you prefer your action to be down to earth or in a galaxy far, far away? If the former, Sledgehammer Games invites you back to the dramatic backdrop of World War II as the Call of Duty series returns to its roots. If the latter, join huge Star Wars battles across three eras and rebel against the Empire or crush the Resistance in Star Wars Battlefront 2. Whether you want to be the hero, villain, or an elite trooper, there's a Star Wars battle fantasy for everyone. Regardless of what choice you make, buckle up. Both boast explosive story-driven campaigns and thrilling multiplayer modes to lose yourself in. And so there you go. Whether you're a fan of Call of Duty or a fan of Star Wars Battlefront, there's something for you next month on PS Plus. Yeah. Do you play either of these games? Are you a fan of either of them?
I have played them. Definitely way more Star Wars than Call of Duty World War II. I was following a lot of the changes they were making to Battlefront 2, and I think for the better. It ended up getting, once they kind of got all the Clone Wars stuff in there, and they were doing those the Supremacy mode, I believe it was called. I could be totally butchering that. It's been a little while since I played, but number one, gorgeous game. And number two, get to play as clones. So that was really cool. You know, fighting on Geonosis and stuff like that. Some of the heroes felt either overpowered or underpowered, depending on who, you know, it's the Overwatch situation. All the heroes are overpowered and they all suck. I wish I had more time to play that game, because it took a while to get to that point of where they sort of iterated on it. But every time I played it, I had a good time. It was a lot of fun. It felt a little grindy. That was sort of my issue.
I've been hearing, like, a lot of great things about it lately. I know when it launched, it had all those issues of, like, loot boxes and microtransactions, and that was, like, the game that really made that conversation kind of explode in a way where that took over the discourse forever. And so for me, like, I love the PS2 Battlefront games. I tried out Battlefront 1, the new Battlefront 1 on PS4 when that came out, and I was just like, all right, this looks beautiful. It's Star Wars, but for some reason it's not clicking with me the way I want it to. And yeah, I didn't even give Star Wars Battlefront 2 a shot after that came out because of all the things that were happening around it. And
you can
so
get it for like $5 are free now. So
yeah, like the fact that it's coming to PS Plus, coming to PS Plus, I think is like the coolest thing ever, because that means that I get to actually try it out in the state that it's in. Which if what people are saying is correct, like it's in a way better state. And so I'm really excited about that. And I think that gives so many people like the same opportunity to try it out.
It has, like, the closest thing to a mode that was in Battlefield 2142, I believe, which I think maybe that was Commander mode or Supreme. What is that called? I'm blanking on this, but that it was the futuristic one where you had to like launch in these pods and get on top of a spaceship and get into the spaceship. And it was just like these different levels and of like where you go from like the surface to the air. And they actually have that in Battlefront 2. And it's kind of exciting. It is like a constant tug of war where you're fighting on the ground, you're fighting up in space, and then you come back down, and it's pretty cool. I think it's worth trying out.
When do you think Star Wars gets a Battle Royale game, coming off of our last two conversations? Like, I'm surprised there's not been, like, a big Battle Royale mode announced for Battlefront yet.
I don't know. I think
unless there isn't, I just don't realize.
Figured out. Maybe. Maybe. I'm sure someone playtested it, but that'd be pretty awesome. You just throw a bunch of clones. You throw them in there, yeah. And it's Boba Fett or Jango Fett being like, fight for my love. Or, like, you know, this could be, like, a testing ground where they're, like, trying out to see who the best clones were, who... You know, the strongest will survive, and they join the elite clone army or something like that. I'm just making stuff up. Hey, Disney, if you're listening, make that, please. Please make that.
Yeah, these are gold. Dice. Hey, Dice, what's up, man? I'm willing to take money.
Seriously.
You can pay me. I'll come through. Let us know. Adam, I'm really excited to see when the Star Wars Battle Royale game gets made, but that's probably so far away. If I wanted to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
Oh, well, the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show host each and every weekday. You caught me off guard.
Yeah, it'll always catch you off guard. Out today, we have Synaptic Drive for Switch and PC, Umihara Kawase Fresh for PC, Umihara Kawase Bazooka for PC, Bug Fables, The Everlasting Sapling for PS4 and Switch, Those Who Remain for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Atomic Crops for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Resolution for Switch, PC, and Mac. Dungeon Defenders Awakened for PC. The Game Paradise Cruisin' Mix Special for Switch. Sega Ages Thunder Force AC for Switch. Shantae and the Seven Sirens for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Hill Climbing Mania for Switch. F-117A Stealth Fighter for Switch. Let's Sing 2020 for Switch and PS4, Fly Punch Boom for Switch and PC, Turmoil for Switch, Hotel R&R for PSVR. Interesting. I think we read about that on PSLWXOXO. I might check that out. Nerve for PC, King Sim for PC, Astroload Free Miners for PC, Polybridge 2 for PC and Mac, Skyhill Black Mist for PC, Steampunk Tower 2 is out now for iOS, and then Rhythm Fighter is out now for PC and Mac. And then Amiad Fredman writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, I wanted to suggest an addition for out today. Airway X on the App Store has a new COVID-19 module out today. The game is being made by Level X, which is a cool game dev company that makes video games for doctors. The games are catered toward doctors, but anyone can play them and learn more about coronavirus or other medical diagnoses/procedures. Video games can be the best way to learn and have fun while doing it. Amiad Fredman, MD. So there you go. If you want to play a game where you can learn more about COVID-19, again, Airway X is what it's called. It's out on the App Store. And then new dates. Virtual reality first-person horror game Dreamback VR is coming out June 10th on Steam. Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Remastered Edition is launching on August 27th. And then Blair Witch is coming to Switch on June 25th. And the deals of the day for you, Borderlands The Handsome Collection is now free on Epic Games Store through June 4th at 11 a.m. Eastern. Damn. Now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, your support means the world to Kind of Funny. Because of you, the audience, Kind of Funny is able to do things like launch a new studio, have special collaboration weeks with Funhouse, launch shows like the return of PSLWXOXO, and more. You can head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to support Kind of Funny Games Daily and all the content we produce on this side of Kind of Funny. And you can gain special perks like exclusive content, becoming a Patreon producer, and more. Once again, just go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to support the show and learn more about what we have to offer. Adam. The Nanobiologist writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, Hi, Blessing Adam. A recent presser for Xbox has told us that Xbox Series X will have the biggest and best lineup in Xbox history, and it'll all be led by Halo Infinite. While I'm a huge Xbox fanboy, can we agree that this may be too much pressure for one studio? Many games are seen as the best foot forward for a system, but I am concerned only based on what Halo 5 did to the series. Could this be a bad move if Halo Infinite goes the same route as Halo 5 with little improvements and not listening to fan criticism? That would be the final nail in the coffin in the general public's mind coffin, leading to other amazing games that will eventually be released by be, leading to other amazing games that will eventually be released, be overshadowed by Infinite's renown? Or am I worrying for nothing as we go into the next generation because Phil Spencer has had very little mishaps slash missteps so far and knows what he's doing? Adam, I want to know what you think in particular, since you're a huge Halo fan. Thanks, the nanobiologist. And so, like, to grant even more context, right? The from news story number one, right, where we talked about backwards compatibility and all that stuff, the blog post, and I cut this out so I can, like, not be reading that blog post all show, but the blog post started off with the following statement. Thousands of developers from across the globe are currently creating the next generation of transformative games, many of which can only be realized through the power and innovation of the Xbox Series X. Led by Halo Infinite, our 15 Xbox Game Studios teams are hard at work creating the biggest and best lineup of exclusives in Xbox history. Adam, is that too much pressure for Halo Infinite?
I think it's sort of pressure they inherited, only because we had what? I'm trying to do the math here. So on the 360, we had, I want to say, three Halos, right? That was Halo 3, ODST, and Reach. And then Xbox One, we got Halo 5 and Master Chief Collection. And that's, you know, that's a bunch of Halo games.
Did Halo 4 come out on?
Oh, Halo 4 is 360 as well. Totally forgot. Oh my God. Yeah. So this next generation came along and you really only got one new Halo game. You can count Halo Wars 2 if you want. But I think most fans probably don't really count that as, like, you know, main staple. And it whiffed hard, especially on the single player side. Multiplayer, I actually enjoyed it. I had a good time with it for a console only shooter. I thought they did some interesting things with it that made the multiplayer a lot of fun. I put a lot of hours into it, surprisingly, probably the most I had put in since Halo 3. So what happened was they were starting Halo 5 and the dev cycle became so long that it made that transition into a launch title, kind of like, you know, Zelda does from time to time, where you go, we need a system seller. So that at some point the talk came about, okay, well, this is going to be a Series X launch because we need this thing, you know, we need something for it. So it's inheriting this pressure essentially, because they had an entire console generation to make one game and they were working on a second one. And my guess is they've gone back to the drawing board multiple times because they're trying to figure out what makes Halo Halo. And that's really hard. And I talked to Greg about this before, but we're saying how studios need to have that id Software moment where you are a bunch of people who are inheriting this franchise. You know, in this case, it's 343 getting it from Bungie and figuring out what at the core makes the game special, but then also what can they do to make it their own. And fingers crossed they figured it out. Looks like they're going back to sort of a Halo 1 aesthetic, and it looks sort of like they're doing a soft reboot of the whole thing, which I'm at this point kind of fine with. Not a big deal. I think you probably need to just start over. There's just so much stuff right now. It's like, let's just go back to the simplicity of what makes Halo, you know, special to the majority of the people who play the games, not the people who read the books and deep dive into the lore, which I was one of those people for the longest time. But I think I'm just looking forward to a really good single player Halo experience, and I hope it delivers on that.
Do you think this is the thing we've been talking about and kind of funny over the last few months as we've been kind of predicting the next generation? I think Tim was the one that floated the idea that, like, this Halo could be the God of War moment for Halo, right? Like, as far as like what you look at what Santa Monica Studios did with God of War, and they brought it back from it being like this franchise that is, you know, iconic for PlayStation, but at the same time, you know, kind of rooted in kind of archaic game design and archaic ideas of what this character needs to be, right? Like, that God of War came out during the PS2 era, and games have evolved so much since then. And so when you got the new God of War, God of War 2018, that game came out and redefined what the franchise was and really, like, brought it back to the forefront of what we see that video game franchise being, right? Like, God of War is now back as, like, oh yeah, this is one of the great gaming franchises of this generation now. Do you think it's possible for Halo Infinite to be that, or do you think that expectation is just way too much?
Well, I mean, right now it's Schrodinger's chief. You know, it could be the best thing in the world, or it could be the worst thing in the world. We don't know yet until we open the box. I'm hopeful. I'm hoping that Halo 4 and Halo 5 and Master Chief Collection have rallied the studio 343 and Microsoft to say, we need to make this a hit. And enough time has gone by now that I think Halo is nostalgic, which is crazy to think about. You know, it is a, I mean, it is a 20-year-old franchise. It's crazy.
Yep.
But it is, it's a, I think it's the beacon a lot of people are looking at. Much, I think the God of War comparison is great. And God of, like, God of War had a different problem where it was cemented in sort of this different time period, and then it evolved and, you know, the character along with it. And it only really had like one kind of whiff with Ascension, which was, you know, just kind of okay. And it wasn't really their game. God of War 3 is still one of the greatest action games of all time. Halo has just been, it's almost been a joke at this point. You know, it's trying to copy the other franchises that it's, you know, basically become popular because of the road it paved for them. So it's, I think it's time that Halo comes back and makes a name for itself and has its God of War moment. Fingers crossed. I really hope it does. I hope they figured out what that was. And it's just not another, you know, Destiny clone or Doom clone or whatever it is. I want them to find the thing that makes Halo special again.
So, I agree. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Now it's time.
Crossed very hard.
Now it's time to squad up. Robbie Rob writes in to patreon.com since kind of funny games with a PS4 squad up and says, hey, KFBFs, it's time to complete my friends list with my last device, and that is the PlayStation 4. I've only recently got it, but have PS Now and PS Plus. I need some help earning some platinum trophies and, of course, people to chat with after long days at the post office. Keep staying awesome, every single one of you. Robbie Rob, your community postman. So if you want to play some games with Robbie Rob, who apparently works at the post office, you can add him at Robbie Rob Plays on PSN. So there you go. Earn him some platinum.
Robbie. Thank you. Thank you for working hard in these crazy times, man.
These crazy times. Essential workers, man. You got to love them. They're great. Doing God's work out there. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. The Nanobiologist writes in and says, The Avengers was the game that Adam was thinking of. It was supposed to come out on PS3, 360, Wii U, and Windows, and was set to release in 2012. Dude, I remember seeing gameplay of that game and being like, what the fuck, man? This seems crazy. Like, whatever this is, this is, I don't know how to feel about it. I didn't necessarily feel awesome about it.
It's so weird.
Like, first person, it was like a fighting game, kind of, right? I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, wait, no. I'm thinking of a different one. Because there are a couple. It's all kind of flooding back to me now. There was one that was a fighting game. That was a Wii-specific one that I was thinking about. The one you're thinking about, I know what you're talking about, which was the first-person game. It wasn't a fighting game. I know what you're talking about.
I mean, it was like an action-adventure game. But, if you can just look it up on Google, there's, you know, THQ's canceled Avengers game, and it's just all this weird first person footage. It's all like kind of proof of concept, or maybe it's gameplay. But yeah, there's, you're flying around as Iron Man, putting your hands up, using your Kinect, you know, that thing. Oh, not going to miss it.
Nanobiologist writes in with breaking news. The Witcher series has officially sold 50 million units. So there you go. Congratulations to The Witcher. Tommy Boy says Leviathan mode is the game mode from Battlefield 2142.
Maybe it's called Leviathan mode. He might be right. Hold on. I'm looking it up now.
And then Nanobiologist writes in with an update to The Witcher series sales. According to Daniel Amad, The Witcher 3 contributed to over 28 million units to that number. And the total number of series sales was at 5 million before The Witcher 3's launch, which is actually like a huge spike. And so there you go. More context on that. Nanobiologist also says, man, Nanobiologist is like on it today. He says there were 5 Halos on 360, Halo 3, ODST, Reach 4, and Halo CE Anniversary.
Yeah. I was trying to think of new games that they made. Sorry, that's what I was thinking more of, like, what the delivery. That is correct. Actually, it's not Leviathan, it's Titan. Titan. Battlefield. Yeah, Battlefield.
There you go.
It's essentially Attack on Titan. Huh. Because you're going after the Titan carrier. Anyway, sorry.
And then Nanobiologist is getting into the weeds of things, but he now says that actually there's 7 Halos on 360 if you count Halo Wars and Halo Spartan Wars. Assault. I'm going to stop you there, Spartan Nanobiologist. Assault. No more.
No. The 360 was the heyday of all Halo stuff. But as far as like talking first person. But yeah, no, you're right. You're right. When you're right, you're right.
And then Robbie Rob, there's a lot of your wrongs, but they're like coming in as I'm talking and they're like help. And there's a lot of clarification that usually I wouldn't read, but these ones are actually very helpful. And so I'm giving you all a pass. But Robbie Rob writes in, this is again from your from the squad up. He says, forgot to add to my squad up to play Loco Roco remastered on PS Now. Easy platinum in less than 5 hours. So there you go. And then the last one I'm going to read is from Yarjun, who writes in and says, blessing, the Marvel fighting game you're talking about might be EA published Marvel Nemesis Rise of the Imperfects. And I can't confirm or deny that. Actually, no, I'm going to look it up right now because it might be right. I don't think this is it as I'm looking it up. Because the game I'm thinking of was like, it was almost like an anime fighter, but with Marvel characters, where it's like behind the back, you got a team. It was a weird one that never got released, but I promise I'm not making it up. It's real. But there you go.
I believe you. That's it. I'll choose this one moment to believe you. This is the only one I give you. I'm sorry.
I appreciate it, Adam. I think we have a good connection here. We should continue this elsewhere. Absolutely. That's it. That's it for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tomorrow's hosts are Greg and Alana Pierce. So stay tuned for that. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.